Coming up next from the Grassy Knoll, a terrifying look into the Orwellian world of brainwashing, disinformation, and ultimately, control over you. You.
You're listening to Dade City Community Radio. I am the Visigoth with the graduate of the School for the Hard to Believe.
Yes, that's for sure, Dr. Swain. No beer cans, no tabs today.
Okay. All right. Before we go on to the main subjects, branching off of the 14th Amendment in America into the Federal Reserve and into the happy land of executive orders, which will probably be a B part of this show, especially being abused by the Shrubster. Cleaning up old business, you crassly upbraided me for perhaps mispronouncing a French word.
Was he right?
I was right.
Okay.
The letters of Mark, M-A-R-Q-U-E. Had it been two E's, we would have had a Marquee.
Okay.
All right.
I can deal with that.
And those letters of Mark refer back to a War Powers Act, United States, under which they could issue these to private agencies such as the IRS, the ATF, the FBI, and the DEA. We also questioned, I believe, whether or not any of these agencies were created by Congress.
Okay.
No.
None of them.
Strange. The strangest one is the IRS. Now, what was the Revolutionary War fought for, supposedly?
Say it again. I'm just looking at this comment up here. I can't believe Baghdad Scotty has earned his. We'll talk about that later. You know who they're talking about. That's the boss talking about Ritter.
Yeah, we have to discuss that.
Anyway,
we have
sorry,
this.
But I was distracted by all this technology around here.
All right, I'll ask you.
All right, try that again. What was the question?
Why do we fight the American Revolution?
Well, the real reason? To drive the British out. We were fighting for independence.
And what was the famous catchphrase? They didn't want what?
Taxation without representation.
Okay, so what do they do 10 years after they get free? They come up with a tax.
It's voluntary.
No, it wasn't.
Oh.
In fact, the people got quite upset about it, and we had the whiskey rebellion.
Right. I kind of remember that.
All right, so that's what happened. One of the first actions of our country was to collect taxes. And in March 1791, Congress approved the law establishing a tariff system on selected imports and an internal excise tax on whiskey. Bad to tax the booze. And I'm sure that was old Alex's idea, too, by the way, more than it was George's.
Yeah.
And he happened to be, obviously, the Treasury Secretary at the time. Now, that tax faded away. And it was funny because the rebellion was suppressed by federalized troops. So that has a long history also. With the Civil War and the Union's demand for revenue, that led to the recreation of the Office of Commissioner of Revenue. The first one had been appointed by Hamilton, with not much to do after the whiskey tax. At the end of the Civil War, it brought also to an end the income tax. But in 1894, now isn't that something that Lincoln presided over, one of the first income taxations? In 1894,
let me ask a question. What did they define as income? I'm curious about that.
That I can't tell you. Didn't go that deep into it. The only thing I can say is, whereas the whiskey tax was an excise tax of sorts, this was a direct taxation of your income. So I don't know how it was defined and what the
measure. The reason why I asked that, not to throw you off track, but because I'm thinking the current income tax law specifies that income is from corporations and not from wages.
Mm-hmm.
And in other words, the definition of income and wages and income are two separate items. And so people have been led down the path that, of course, now based on the news, we don't have to worry. At least I don't have to worry. You might have to worry, but
no,
100,000 plus a year. So,
well, what's interesting about the whole legitimacy of an income tax is that They tried to get one up in 1894, and it didn't work out. The Supreme Court declared the tax unconstitutional. Then it said, but broad political pressure for a more muscular federal government led to the ratification of the Constitution's 16th Amendment on February 13th, 1913.
This is the law that never was.
Well, yeah, and I, you know, this is a whitewash. This comes from the IRS website about how it was a heavy pressure. It was the globalists and the Rothschilds, and that's what happened, because it is one of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto that there shall be a graduated income tax. All right, so that wasn't any coincidence. So anyway, the IRS kind of snuck into being, if you will, with the office being opened back up in 1862, not doing very much, and of course it still was in existence, and then got some teeth in 1913. So there's the IRS, questionably, you know, not created by Congress, but there's others. Check this out. So the Secret Service began in 1865. And it was created out of the Treasury Department.
Well, probably created as a result of the assassination on Abraham Lincoln.
They didn't start to cover, I don't believe, presidents until after Garfield and McKinley got popped. Then they probably figured that we better do something about this.
I was just thinking because 1865,
Right. No, apparently it wasn't. But, you know, let's face it. After you lose three presidents inside 30 years, 35 years, you better do something. And it befell them. They were not created by Congress. Also, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, separated from the IRS by the Treasury Department in 1972, not created by Congress. The DEA, 1973, Nixon created it from the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs and various other law enforcement and intelligence gathering agencies. Now, doesn't that sound like something that went on today? That's going on today with this expanding
big,
right. And that also was done by Tricky Dick by executive order. Okay, and then finally, what do we have? We have the all-timer. We've got the Federal Bureau of Investigation created by Congress.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Are you kidding me?
Incorrectamundo. No, by 1907, the Department of Justice most frequently called upon Secret Service, quote, operatives, unquote, to conduct investigations. Now, this frustrated the then Attorney General Charles Bonaparte, and I don't know, but I would assume he might be.
Yeah.
Okay. And finally, he tried to posture for an agency that would just be would lend itself to investigations, and it did happen on July 26, 1908. They appointed a number of special agents from the Secret Service and a number of Department of Justice, what they call peonage investigators.
Now, what does that mean?
FBI.
What's that?
Actually, in parentheses, they refer to it as compulsory servitude. God knows what that means.
Well, we might go back to what you said about love your servitude. You know,
there you go.
It's so compulsory.
So there's all these agencies.
I mean, what kind of servitude isn't compulsory?
Yeah, but you would think, you know.
Yeah, I know.
It sounds like it's like the prisoners are watching the hen house. All right, going back to what we touched upon with what happened after the 14th Amendment, here's the main thrust of this, and I was scattershot with where I was going with it last time. And I would like just to sum it up and then from that move on.
Right.
The North wins the Civil War. Here the conquest starts. 14th Amendment America definitely was a different nation as the federal government was expanded and its debt was picked up by us. And our picking up that debt is key. The bankers, in turn, are in control of the debt.
We kind of knew that.
What happens after the Civil War, the U.S. troops force the southern states to accept the 14th Amendment. Now, almost every state, north and south, also changed their state constitutions. The 14th Amendment says the government now, that we can no longer question the debt. Why? Because now the king wants all the gold, silver, and copper, and the land, which can easily be done by increasing the government debt and making the American people sureties for the debt. This has been done by the sleight of hand of lawyers and bankers, and these two professions will come up time and time again. I also talked about belligerency, and that was the fact that the Federals were belligerents. The South was the vanquished, and you could say all of us are. And one of the most serious results of the belligerency is that the belligerents are not responsible for whatever takes place within the conquered's land, which would be the United States.
Okay.
All right, we have been talking about, we're going to brush upon whether or not the law of the land now is any longer the Constitution.
The Constitution.
or whether it was the Uniform Commercial Code.
Okay.
Since supposedly now the United States is a corporation of which we are employees per se. I don't know about that. That's been bandied about a lot, and we have something that kind of debunks it, but it's interesting. But I will say this about the UCC. It may, in fact, be the law, the letter of the law when it comes to non-criminal cases such as murder and
civil cases.
Right, civil cases opposed to torts and the like. So regardless whether the UCC, which is a big internet legend right now, being the law of the land, what about the bankruptcy, though? I do believe there is something to the bankruptcy.
Well, it concerns me because, like we discussed the other day, I think when you're bankrupt, and you can reestablish your credit, you can reestablish your finance, but it doesn't alter the fact that you're bankrupt. I don't know much about that, but maybe that 7-year thing goes out, and if that's the case in the United States, are they not? But if the United States, didn't the state of Michigan file bankruptcy at one time?
You would know that probably better
I'm
than
thinking
I.
back in the 59, I mean, it was...
Well, New York City was going
to... So are they now bankrupt or,
Well, I think that what's meant here is that it was deliberate and it was perpetual bankruptcy. Because from the point especially of the Federal Reserve being created in 1913 and a graduated income tax, and this goes on across, the globe, that we were all in harness now to the international banksters. From 1928 to 1932.
You said banksters, like
banksters,
in gangsters.
Yes,
yeah, okay, gotcha. Okay.
From 1928 through 1932, there were 5 years of Geneva Conventions. The nations of the world met in Geneva, Switzerland for those 5 years in order to set up what would be the policy of all participating countries. In 1930, the United States, Great Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Portugal, among others, all declared bankruptcy.
They didn't have any money.
Well, remember what happened there, too. We had the stock market crash in 1929. That was a pandemic situation, not just endemic to the United States. So we've got the whole world basically hurting.
Well,
so,
couldn't an argument be made, though, that that's largely due to the fact that the economies are linked?
Of course. And
I don't mean linked by conspiracy, but linked by the fact that, they have investments. Countries have investments in the United States, so, it has a ripple effect. I hate to use that characteristic phrase.
But if in fact it was perpetuated by the banksters, which we know it was, they're not going to do something localized. I mean, they're going to make sure that there's enough entangling financial alliances that they can grab everybody at the same time. And that's what we're seeing now, because what we're headed for with the New World Order is nothing less or more than a corporate takeover of the world, brought to you by the capitalists that had run capitalism into the ground to make Marxism look good to all of us.
Who was it that said recently that corporations would supplant government because corporations could run things better than...
Well, I think the word you're looking for instead of better is efficiently.
Efficiently.
And that isn't a very warm and fuzzy word with regard to human beings. And people get very hip to sustainable development because it sounds great and it sounds loving, but it's anything but that.
I think I saw that word efficient in that email comment from Michael Powell, too, about the fact that the government up to this point had done but now it's time to...
Get efficient.
Get efficient.
All right, to sum up then, in 1930 there was a worldwide depression, and the bankers said, look, you can do it either one of two ways, the easy way or the hard way. You just accept the bankruptcy and we'll let you out of the depression. If you don't, you're on your own. So all the countries involved agreed because they realized that the international banksters had them by the throat. The countries therefore agreed that over a period of several years they would pass statutes and legislation for the implantation of the bankruptcy in favor of the international bankers.
Actually, you were a lot nicer. I think they had them by something else. But
yes, that's true.
So what you're telling me is that basically they strangled these countries, and then if they would play ball, the same bankers would then extend them credit to stimulate and, a lesser amount perhaps, but just enough.
And let's cut right to the chase, too. What is credit? It's nothingness.
Yeah.
And that's where the Federal Reserve comes in. So let's talk about the Fed.
Okay, which is, of course...
is neither.
Oh, come on. The truth is there's 12 member banks.
That's right.
And...
With New York having the most power.
There's probably its biggest place. There's actually a Federal Reserve Bank in Jacksonville.
Well, that's not the big, that's not the one.
Atlanta, I think.
Yes, it is. Yep, that's correct. Yep. All right. Now, how does this Federal Reserve scam work? Okay. The way they create money in a simplified form would go like this. Congress needs money because they always spend above the taxes that they garner. Is that correct?
Well, not legally, but yes.
That's right. They go to the Treasury Department and they look for some money there, but guess what? The Treasury's empty because the money's already been spent by whom? The government.
Okay.
All right. So they go further down the street and they go to the Treasury Department to print bonds. Okay. They get the Treasury to print bonds, and the public goes for it because at least they'll make something on the interest. They feel they're safe because they are backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. Now, who supplies the full faith and credit of the United States government, Dr. Swain?
We only owe ourselves, is
yeah,
what I've always
exactly.
been thought.
We're the ones.
So, yeah.
So these people figure, well, look, I'm going to get nailed anyway, so why not make a little bit back on it? So they go for the T-bonds, all right? But they always need more money than what they can get in T-bonds.
You're also hitting on something that's, I'm thinking ahead maybe, but you mentioned the word interest, that these guys are going to get paid. And if they don't have money to start with, and then they're paying, doesn't make any sense here.
No, you are a precocious student, Dr. Swain.
You're paying interest on, and where are you getting that from?
Exactly. What happens is they go down to the Federal Reserve because they need more money, and the good bankers at the Federal Reserve write out
the
check.
They want to do the right thing.
Right. So we're going to say they're going to write a check for $1 billion.
So the Federal Reserve people don't have any money either?
No. Nope. It comes from nothing. In fact, at the instance that check is signed, that dollar, $1 billion springs into existence out of the thin air. All right. Now, Congress wants the Fed to do this because they want the money, and there's a reason why. But if you did this, if you did the same thing in a lower scale, what would happen to you?
Like write a bad check.
You can call it a bad check.
Yeah.
So what would happen?
They'd come and see me.
That's
Somebody
right.
would come and find me.
That's right. And you'd be wearing the striped pajamas.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. But since Congress wants the Fed to do it, there's no penalty for it. Because they can get, since the government can't get any more money from the people through taxes, which would make them very restive and unpleasant, they do it through this situation of creating money, which gets them interest.
Right.
Correct? And causes us what, though? Inflation.
Which is good.
Which is also a hidden tax. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So the Treasury takes the $1 billion check into a checking account that's in a Federal Reserve Bank. Now the federal government can start writing checks against it. Now look at this scenario, okay? Let's say you, Dr. Swain, are paid $100 a week. All right. Now you get your $100 check.
How did you know?
No, it's Florida. It's not kidding around. So we pay you, Dr. Swain. You get paid $100 and you deposit into your checking account. Now this is where that money goes into the commercial sector. It always winds up in the commercial sector, but this is one of the ways that it does. Now the money is in the commercial banking system, the final destination. So what does the commercial banker do now? Since he's got your $100, what does he do? What can he do with it?
Lend it out.
That's right.
Dole it out to other people.
Right. Opens the window, says we got money to loan. And in these systems, there's always more money going out than coming in. And what he has to do is, what he can do, is on that $100 deposit, he can loan up to $900. Because the Federal Reserve requirements state that only 10% of the deposits should be kept in reserve. So $900 now springs up into being at the moment the money is loaned. All right? Now, the government likes it because it gets to spend $1 billion. $9 billion goes to the commercial banks, which they like, and they loan it to borrowers for their projects. Okay? But they're making interest on what?
The nine.
Absolutely
yeah.
nothing. The supposed $900 billion. But the problem with this is that the money goes out and it dilutes the value of dollars, which creates inflation. Now, inflation is the appearance of rising prices. Appearance because, in reality, prices don't go up. but the value goes down. Real money, if it were backed on gold or silver or some metal of intrinsic value, yes, then real prices would remain constant, extremely stable over a long period of time.
See, that's one of the things people don't think about when they hear on the news that the price of gold is $432 an ounce. What the value of gold remains constant, and it's the amount of fiat money that takes to acquire that gold at that. But people don't see it that way. They look at it.
No, in fact, I think you might have come across this because you've taken economics. I haven't, and I'm very far removed from any college courses with regard to the finance at all. But have you ever heard the term of flexible currency?
Flexible?
Have you ever heard that? You might have.
Yeah, might have gone one ear out the other.
And all that is printing money backed on nothing. And that's how they can maneuver the inflation rates. Well, anyway, the dollars are really what? Are they really silver notes?
No, they're Federal Reserve notes.
Right.
In fact, they're not Treasury notes. They're nothing notes.
And they'll always be valued less and less because they're always created more and more. Right.
One of the things, what the heck, in one ear and out the other, you were mentioning, you ever see the Three Stooges thing where Mo and Curly and Larry, they each owe each other $3?
Oh, and it goes around.
It goes around. That's exactly, if you want to tell somebody how the economy, in other words, Mo ends up with a dollar again, through no mistake. But the dollar, he gets the dollar back and everybody is satisfied.
Well, do you not think that shtick was written at a time when they got hip to what was going on?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. What's lost here is purchasing power. We lose purchasing power, but then who gets it? Well, the money trail leads to who spends the newly created money first. And that would be the government, which spends it immediately. Second would be the borrowers, and the borrowers who are the first to get there and can spend it fast, as long as the economy is expanding. If it isn't, they're in big trouble. And the banking cartel likes this because they get money in on absolutely nothing. But who is hurt worst? This inflation is a real tax. It's a most cruel tax and a most unfair tax because it falls on those least able to pay it. Those on fixed incomes, those retired, and on the wage earners. Yeah, wage earners do get cost of living adjustments, but guess what? It doesn't neutralize anything because it comes after the tax. So we always are trying to catch up. The hidden power of inflation is a tax unbeknownst to voters, and the banking cartel collects interest on absolutely nothing. So that's my clipped version of how the Federal Reserve works. And actually, that comes from C. Griffin. Let me get his name right here. He's the author of The Creature from Jekyll Island. It's G. Edward Griffin.
And I didn't see in the list of web updates that I did
that he's there?
He's there. So
okay.
We need to add
that. He's coming. My mistake. And actually, that's on the APFN website, which is up there.
Okay.
All you would have to do is click or go in a search box and type in Creature of Jekyll Island, and you can listen to Griffin deliver an hour-and-a-half lecture, and he is a very enrapting speaker.
Now, I will something to talk about down the road is I might be able to present an argument to show you that the economy, believe it or not, was in better shape under Jimmy Carter than it is right now.
Well, why don't we finish up with you?
With an 18% inflation rate, yeah. But we can, okay, do that now?
Or? Yeah, we can wrap it up.
Okay.
So, I mean, go.
There's an argument to be made. For example, if you bought a piece of property for $100,000, okay, there's real interest rate, there's interest rate and the real rate of inflation. And interest, if you bought property at, for example, an interest rate of 10%, okay, well, we'll take a step further. The interest rate was 18% at one time under the Carter administration.
Okay.
And if you bought property with the inflation rate running at 10%, then not counting taxes, the real rate of inflation was 8%. So if you bought property for $100,000 and sold it the next year based on that inflation rate, that your rate of return is, what, $108,000. Mm-hmm. Now, today, the interest rate is what?
Was I 20?
Well, the real what interest, the real, the know. Prime rate is what I'm concerned.
Okay.
The prime rate is running about 6%. Okay? The rate of inflation is running 3%. the rate of return on that same $100,000 is 3%. So the reality is that the higher and wider the distance is between the actual and the rate of inflation, the better rate of return it is for Joe Blow. And that's why people are getting nothing. And to see, and going back to what we discussed, Greenspan and these guys are not happy because the overnight lending rate is so low that they're not making anything on their return. So what you have to do then is force the economy into depression and recover, basically steal everything that everybody has in order to compensate for that.
Well, one of the ways that the Fed tried to get people back into banks to get loans, business people, because what was happening is they were just saving up and then doing any expansions or improvements with their own money.
Right.
So they didn't like that. The banksters didn't like that. So what they did was, although they don't like it, they dropped down the interest rates on absolutely nothing to make it so attractive to get them in the door. Now, you, once you get them in the door, you can do with them later.
Exactly.
But would you not agree that those differences in those figures from the 18 to the 6 and the 8 to the 3 was due to inflation?
Absolutely.
Because it seems, and I've read about this so many times when you look at the history of the 70s, that somewhere around the time that we went off the gold standard in what, 75 or so?
Nixon was president,
right.
Yeah.
What happened then was that there really was a disparity between the haves and the have-nots that widened from that point onward. And that was because of the gold situation and I think the fiat currency becoming
keep in
more
mind,
prevalent.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the amount of fiat currency that it cost to buy an ounce of gold was about $35. And since 1974, the amount of fiat that takes to buy an ounce of gold has gone from $35 to over $400. And that tells you everything you need to know right there.
And to bring us back to the start, the thing is that we are in servitude. Whether we're bankrupt or not, in essence, in a sense, we are, because we will always be paying off a perpetual debt that will do nothing more than rise to the international banks. When the New World Order takes over, I'll be really interested in seeing.
I'm beginning to think when. I'm thinking they already have, you know.
Well,
yeah.
They just haven't taken it all
and,
yet.
And it affects their friends in Canada. I mean, their situation isn't any better, you know.
No.
Zero. We actually have another minute or so. If you got anything you want to pull out?
No, I think it's very strange. And I went into the savings and loan, or the credit union, rather, where I keep my paltry few pennies. And I asked the one of the managers there. I said to him, do you realize that the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor reserve? And the manager had no idea. Knew they didn't have reserves, or they knew how many reserves they had to have, which is 10%,
yeah,
right, of your deposits, but had no idea it wasn't federal. How in the world did we
get
labor
it
under the impression that the Federal Reserve is federal, and most people do anyway?
Well, they think Federal Express is probably federal, too.
Oh, please. Well, maybe
I'm telling you. One other thing that I keep, it keeps going in and out of my mind here, and it's slipped back out again. That's pretty bad. The point I was trying to, it had to do with the fiat currency, but it'll come back again. We'll pick this
up. You
want
to end on that golden moment?
Yeah.
From the Grassy Knoll is a production of Dade City Community Radio. This program highlights pertinent issues deliberately not reported by our managed information service. You are encouraged to rebroadcast this show on local grassroots, non-commercial stations. Also, you are invited to comment on this and other programs by emailing us at dcmicroradio@aol.com. For Dade City Community Radio, I'm Dr. Swain.
Please fasten your seatbelts.